Our forecast for today, decreasing clouds with the sunshine coming through, and we'll have a high around the mid-50s. The Western Racine County Services Center building in Burlington, the site for County Executive Jonathan Delgray's next listening session, coming up at 4 this afternoon till about 6 o'clock. The county exec to be joined by county staffers and Ani Lefebvre, the community navigator for the western part of the county. Lefebvre to be showcasing the county services at that location, including workforce solutions and human services. It's also a chance for interested parties to learn maybe about plans on demolishing that building, either later this year or early next year, and possibly the new location of the Burlington Senior Center. The capital campaign going forward in Kenosha to renovate a vacant building into a single-site permanent homeless shelter and soup kitchen continues to grow by leaps and bounds, thanks mainly to anonymous community supporters. Executive Director Lynn Bees Carroll says now over $850,000 has been raised, one anonymous donor continuing to match contributions from area churches, even though the man's initial $200,000 match has already been met. Bees Carroll adds that this same donor is offering to match contributions to the operating fund up to $100,000. The man said to be especially pleased with the soup kitchen, and it's offering a meal every night for the past 34 years. Michigan's Corbin Design is going to continue on the wayfinding signage project for the city of Racine. The Public Works Committee, meanwhile, also backing the installation of wayfinding signs on a state project for the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed S.C. Johnson and Wingspread facilities. Regarding the city project, Development Office Specialist Ben Lander explained that this is the next step in the process with Corbin Design. They specialize in this kind of work. Alderman Jason Meekma, little caution about attempts at micromanagement.
You know, I trust the staff. Did a great job with this. I like the design personally, and I'm just going off of what I've seen. I've known about it for almost the entire year that I've been involved. I haven't really asked a lot of questions about it because I just didn't feel the need to because I knew it was in the process. But it was, I knew about it and I knew I could.
Downtown Racine Director Devin Sutherland said these signs were on their strategic plan back in 2008, and there's been good feedback so far. As for the state project and the Frank Lloyd Wright signs, City Engineer John Rooney explained they would direct people off the interstate at Highway 20, then onto 14th Street in the SCJ complex, through downtown, along Main Street north toward 4 Mile Road and Wingspread.
This is only being routed in by the state off of I-94.
Okay.
And they're telling motorists there, if you're traveling through the state and you want to see Frank Lloyd Wright, come in on Highway 20. That's where I assume they're going to catch them. So how they get them in for somebody who happens to leave I-94 north of Highway 20 and meanders their way into Racine, that I couldn't tell you.
The Frank Lloyd Wright signs will be going up within the next few weeks in the city before any of the wayfinding signs on the local attractions, also before the state puts up their Wright signs along the interstate in May. Schedule now is set for the 31st season of the Animal Crackers concert series at the Racine Zoo. It'll showcase nationally recognized top jazz artists from around the country. It all begins July the 12th with Bria Skonberg, whom Vanity Fair describes as shaking up the jazz world. July the 26th brings multiple Grammy Award nominee Gerald Albright to the Lakefront stage, one of the biggest stars today in R&B, contemporary, and straight-ahead jazz. Booker T. Jones led the 1960s group Booker T. and the MGs, and he'll be performing on August the 9th. Closing out the series this year on August the 23rd, the legendary John Carlton. His resume includes a 1981 Grammy for collaborating on the Hill Street Blues TV series theme and work on more than 100 gold albums. Racine's 3rd Aldermanic District will have a new representative starting next Tuesday night. The recount yesterday was concluded. John Tate II came out 4 votes ahead of incumbent Mike Shields, not the 5 as on election night. Mike Shields' last council meeting is next Monday night. Tate will be sworn in the following night. The Racine City Plan Commission is to meet at City Hall and Council Chambers this afternoon about 4:15, and among the agenda items, consideration of an amendment to the comprehensive plan through the year 2035 to designate that little sliver of land for the Fisher USA project, change it to industrial from the current listing of isolated natural resources area. And We Energy is requesting an extension to earlier conditional use permit approval to replace an existing 200-foot tall communications tower with one that is 230 feet tall. Just by comparison purposes, WRJN's tower is 337 feet. The Mount Pleasant Zoning Board of Appeals got a pretty hot issue on its May 17th agenda. A home-based cabinet-making company deemed to be in violation in 1992 of an order and was to stop operating by the year 2005. A community activist caught on to that and filed a complaint. Ron's Custom Cabinets has been at the Giddings Road location for more than four decades. A building addition led to that 1992 Board of Zoning Appeals order, but the business did not move from that location or shut down. It kept going. Kelly Gallagher is who filed the complaint. One of the owners of the business, Juliet Primeth, formerly Juliet Edmonds, the one-time Mount Pleasant Town and Village Clerk. Racine's Public Safety and Licensing Committee supporting a Class A fermented malt beverage license application for the Target store on Durand Avenue by Regency Mall. A company representative said that beer sales are allowed at their store on Highway 50 in Pleasant Prairie, also in Oak Creek, and at other stores around the country. Like several other big-name retailers, Target has moved now to offer food and beverage products in recent years. The store in Racine, by the way, opened in 1981. Well, after spotting a vehicle being driven erratically on Monday of this week, a Racine County highway worker is getting praise for keeping a drunk driver from leaving the scene of what turned into a single-vehicle accident in the village of Sturtevant. Julie Anderson is the county's director of Public Works and Development Services. She told the Board of Supervisors last night that she got a call from Sturtevant's police chief, Sean Marski, about the incident. Anderson saying that their employee, J.D. Davidson, was out doing routine work on Highway H Monday afternoon when he saw this unfold.
He called into our shop and said, call the police. There's a guy driving down Highway H, and he's all over the road, and he's going to wind up killing somebody. Well, shortly after that, this individual in this vehicle veered off and hit a pole.
Davidson did stop, made sure the driver who was trying to back up did not get away.
Our driver then had the wherewithal to stop next to this vehicle or in some proximity to the vehicle and approach the car and made sure that the driver stayed on scene because the driver was trying to back up and get away.
Meanwhile, Chief Marski told Anderson that the driver who was going to work at the time could have caused a much more serious crash had he taken off. Anderson said this is the type of leadership expected of county employees. She's proud Davidson made the decision to stop what could have been a dangerous situation. Oh, and remember that most recent traffic crash into the fence at the southwest corner of the Batten Airport property in Racine? Turns out a woman showed up the day after media reports on the damage and covered the bill, just under $1,000 and no questions. The mishap left enough debris that airport manager Dave Mann had an auto body shop identify the offending vehicle as a Toyota Camry. It was just the latest crash into that fence on that stretch of North Green Bay Road in recent memory. New federal immigration policies are expected soon, and while their impact isn't quite clear just yet, Gateway Technical College is taking steps to inform students and staff and to respond to their needs and concerns. In his weekly message, Gateway President Brian Albrecht said that the school has been working with local authorities trying to ensure all their obligations are being met. Posters are being put up with information about student rights and sources for legal counsel, and he says steps are being taken to ensure students' privacy.
It's a critical aspect of what we do in all educational institutions to make sure that we protect the students' rights, and many of those rights are designed around privacy issues. We don't release any information about a student without permission, and this is another case to assure that students know that we are here for them in all aspects of their not only educational lives, but also their personal lives.
He says Gateway will not stop law enforcement, cannot stop them, in fact, including federal agencies from coming to campus, noting they have a job to do.
But we want to make sure that if there are issues, of which there have not been any issues at Gateway thus far, but if there are, we want everyone to be aware of the fact that treat students with respect and dignity and try to follow all the protocols that are necessary to assure that we have a safe communication line with our students and with our staff, and that our faculty understand the protocols that they need to take in order to inform supervisors and any level of campus security.
Albrecht says there are no plans to create any kind of sanctuary status for the Gateway campuses, adding that Gateway's commitment is to provide information and support to the limits the law will allow. City of Kenosha's got a recognition program called Hometown Heroes. The commission overseeing that effort will meet later this afternoon at the Municipal Building. The agenda calling for a general review of the award program. Also, discussion about honoring Kenosha Vietnam veterans who are members of the Honor Guard. The award program identifies and it recognizes hometown heroes as men and women who have served or are currently serving in the armed forces, born in, currently reside in, or previously resided for at least 10 years in the city of Kenosha. The award's given on a quarterly basis, May 31st being the next nominating deadline for the honors to be doled out in July at the Kenosha Council meeting. Kenosha County next Tuesday going to be recognizing the third recipient of the Connie Reyes Award for Excellence when it comes to efforts against child abuse and neglect. Reyes worked in the county's Division of Children and Family Services when she was murdered in 1990 as a result of her job. Kenosha County Executive Jim Cruiser, in a release, says honoring Reyes includes recognizing all the dedicated individuals and organizations that do this very important work every day. The ceremony will take place at 4 p.m. April the 18th in the Commons area of the county's Human Services Department building on South Sheridan Road. Oh, and in case you were wondering, the Milwaukee Brewers are the 26th most valuable Major League Baseball franchise at $925 million, according to Forbes. Cubs are $2.7 billion, the White Sox $1.35 billion. Yep, the Yankees still number one on the list at $3.7 billion. WRJN Newscast, again available in podcast form throughout the day on our webpage, WRJN.com, in the local news section, and also our Twitter updates throughout the day at WRJN News. Our forecast coming up. I'm Tom Carco, WRJN News.